You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It was a really exciting first hour. Eddie George, the new coach at Tennessee State, dropped by. Fantastic conversation. If you want to go back and catch it, if you are just getting on board here on radio or TV or however you're consuming us, the phone number is 855-242-7285. 2 hours from now, we'll talk to Seth Walder, who has come out with the latest FPI. It's fascinating. We'll go over it a little bit later on. For those who missed the first hour, Alabama's number one, of course. Mississippi State is in the top 10. No, it's not April Fool's Day. It's April 13th. Let's get back to the calls and check in with Jim, who is up next. Hello, Jim.
How you doing today, Paul?
Jim, we are doing well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I had to take a trip, take some service animals up to Minnesota from Alabama on Friday. And we couldn't help ourselves but swing by Waterloo. When you see Waterloo sign, you know, first thing you think about is Robert.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
how cool.
Know, we miss hearing him. We miss having him on. So we swung out of our way. We went through Waterloo. We looked for the sign, you know, saying home of Robert and Waterloo. But they haven't put one up yet.
Well, Jim, but, I tell you what.
We gave him a shout.
He would have, it's been about 10 years since a group of us from the show flew up to Waterloo and spent the day with Robert. And you've heard me talk about it, and many perhaps have not. But I would rank it among the most meaningful and memorable days I've ever had. It was so special to we took Tammy with us. And the relationship that she and Robert developed that day and really continued with until she passed away was priceless.
We pulled up the video of that trip too as we were going through there. So we thought about Tammy, we thought about Robert. I've been calling for a decade now, believe it or not. And you know, for a lot of your older callers, I'm definitely not one of those. But how can you not go through and how can you not think about Robert? And then when you think about Robert, you think about Tammy. So I just want to let you know we gave him a shout out. We were thinking about you at the same time as we went on through.
And Jim, I'm not that familiar with what you're doing with service animals, but it sounds like you're doing a great deal. So my compliments to you on that.
We were just trying to help. There was a couple from Birmingham that moved up to Duluth, Minnesota, and they didn't have any, you know, and it was just something I found on Facebook or something. They didn't have anybody to help, and they were an older couple, and you know, they just, when you have support animals and such like that, you know how important it is, and you can't be without them. So I would have done it for, it didn't matter, you know, take a couple of days off work, and it's important. My daughter needed a service animal when she was over in college, and she's over that now and getting ready to graduate this year, walking on the 30th. But I understand the importance of it. And, you know, it's about try to be about service, but it's more about trying to just, you know, be there for people. So, and you know what? There's been a lot of places, Paul, that you've let me talk about a lot of things. And if you think about it, the things you've let me talk about, how many lives have you saved today, Paul, just for opening up your platform, my brother?
Well, Jim, I appreciate you saying that, but you're doing the work. And you keep calling. Always enjoy it. And let's continue this for a long time.
You got it, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. And great work there. John is up next. Hey, John. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Paul, you doing okay?
I am. Thanks for asking, and I hope you are.
Good. Yeah, I'm well. Thank you. Paul, I got to ask you something. I don't, this time of year, normally watch a lot of ESPN because it's all about the draft.
Right.
But I've been compelled to because Mac Jones, like Get Up and the one with Stephen A. Smith, is how's he become such a polarized figure? It seems like everything's about him. Like half the people say no, he shouldn't go to San Francisco, and the other half's like, yeah, he should.
Well, let me see if I can explain, John. And I was on Get Up a week ago tomorrow talking about that very same subject, so I feel like I have some knowledge. What makes Mac so interesting is that there is disagreement. There's no disagreement about the top of the draft. There really isn't any disagreement about the number two pick. And arguing over whether Devontae Smith, Jamar Chase, Waddle, or Kyle Pitts should be the next pick is interesting on one level, but Mac Jones is top line, if you follow me. Everyone has a different opinion. And having done those shows for many, many years, they thrive on disagreement. They thrive on conflict. They thrive on my opinion is diametrically opposed to your opinion. So therefore, Mac Jones has become the poster child of the draft.
Well, you know, and I thought about. I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. But and I think about that. I wonder is okay. For instance, Marcus Spears. He doesn't believe he should be in the top 20. Does he really believe that, or do you think it's more?
Now hey, John. Now you're asking for state secrets. I will give you a little. I will give you some backstory here, and I'm not talking out of school. I've done Get Up for many years, as you may or may not know, because you don't watch ESPN. I would go up there during the fall, and I would do that show a couple of days a week, and. You have a meeting. It's a little bit different now because everybody is scattered because of COVID. But you have a meeting in the morning, which is a continuum of what transferred, what happened the night before, and you know what they don't want on that show are they don't want your whole take. But they do want to know which way you're going because you don't want to ask three straight people a question and have them all say the same thing. So if Marcus Spears says, for example, he shouldn't even be in the draft, you're going to him first. You want to set the – and then you get a guy that comes back and say, well, hold on a second. I think he ought to. It's everyone believes their opinion. It's just a matter of how you produce it and stage it. That's all I'm saying. Now this show, we don't know what anybody thinks, and that's why it's a train wreck so often.
Yeah, yeah.
But those shows, now First Take is different. And I say this with affection for Stephen A. The opinion of the guest is the least important opinion. The only opinion that matters there is Stephen A's.
Yeah. Well, like your song says, Paul will make sense of it all. You did explain a lot to me.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, there are not many things in the world I understand well. The producing of those particular shows, I have years of experience of being a part of them. Hey, thanks for the call. I apologize for my coughing, but I think, like everybody, the pollen has finally overwhelmed me. If I just suddenly disappear, let's check out Trey next in Tuscaloosa. Hey, Trey, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, how are you, my friend?
I am doing great. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Hey, Paul, how far is Ohio State and the Big Ten falling? When Jeff calls in, he talks about your show losing umph. And all he wants to talk about is the price of wood and Jim. What's up with that?
Yeah, and by the way, I didn't mean to be insensitive to the price of lumber. I realize it's at an all-time high. But I figure that the people that build homes and use lumber for whatever they use lumber for can deal with that. And it probably doesn't have to be top line here on our show.
I totally agree. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, by the way, I want to give him a message. I think Devontae Smith just scored again. I'm not sure yet, Paul.
Well, anyway, Trey, that is why Jeff came in here last night with a tired old take about how bad the show is and how the price of lumber is ruining his life. You and I both know if Ohio State had not been emasculated in that game, he would still be bragging about how they beat Alabama down.
You got that right. But Paul, I watched the documentary on Vanderbilt, the bowling.
Right.
I have a question for you about Vanderbilt women's sports. Do you know the reason is why they don't have a softball or a volleyball team?
I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you knew all, Paul.
I mean, I tell you what. The only reason I knew they didn't was one year I was doing a promo or something for the SEC women's softball tournament. And I said, coming up next week, all 14 SEC teams will be playing in wherever they were playing. And somebody immediately told me there are 13 teams.
13 teams. Hey, and one more question before you go. Who do you see having a better chance beating Saban as one of his assistants? Lane, Jimbo, or Kirby? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, the day he was hired, I thought it would be Lane, because he almost pulled it off. I'm not sure it will be that easy for Lane again. But I'm going to let that question linger out there. I think it's a really interesting question. And, certainly Kirby and Jimbo are probably much better positioned than Lane will be. Let's take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back, and really want to talk about something special here. Headline about Pat Dye's personal championship memorabilia being auctioned off for charity. And Rick Davison joins us, who's part of a legendary Auburn family in and of itself. And he's going to join us to talk about some ways that we all can help, perhaps, to continue Coach Dye's wishes of helping a particular charity. Rick, thank you very much for being here. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Paul. We really appreciate you giving us this opportunity to talk about somebody we loved and a great cause that he established for us to try to fulfill his wishes.
Rick, of course, you're the president of the board of the Crooked Oak Legacy Foundation. And for those who don't know, exactly what is that?
This is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation that was established to try to carry out coaches' desires and wishes to keep the Crooked Oaks Farm up and running so that folks could come enjoy it, could stay there, could hunt there, and more importantly, that we could employ interns and other Auburn students who work in fields that that will ultimately be their profession, that somewhat mimic what he did out there every day for a number of years, well, since 1993 when he stopped coaching. And he cared deeply about the wildlife. He cared deeply about the people that worked there. He poured his heart into his gardens, into the Japanese maple nursery that he established on the farm. And he told us, there's a small group of us he gathered a couple years ago. He said, Rick, you know, I want this thing to keep going long after I'm gone. And we had no idea at the time it would be as soon as it was. But he said, don't sell it and just give the money away. Go on and keep it alive and keep it running. And so he told us to use whatever means we had and items that we could to keep that vision alive. And this auction seemed like a real natural way for us to do that and to share part of his history and his life and his legacy with other folks who would find it interesting, and obviously also allow us to rescue horses and pay for vet bills and to do things like that would please him.
Rick, I want to talk to you about so many other things, but you know, Coach Dye cared so much about these things that, you know, so many things that we really didn't know that much about, and it's still sad for all of us, especially people like you who spent time seeing him and trying to help fulfill his wishes. But it just I don't know. I just still feel empty realizing that he's not around. I mean, we were all. It was just such one of my favorite moments of every year when we got down to Auburn, and we could. I mean, suddenly the clock had turned back 35, 40 years, and it was like it was 1981 all over again.
Absolutely, I was in seventh grade when he came to town, and with my father working in an athletic department, it was a great privilege to kind of see the change in what he did to Auburn and for Auburn, and the way it changed the way we thought about ourselves and the way we looked at where Auburn men and women stood and where we could stand. And I've told many people, you know, it, a lot of ways we were out-funded and out-buildinged and out, I guess, out-facilitated in ways. But from the time he stepped to that podium and took the job, we'd never been out-manned since then. And when you mention what it's like to miss him, it's real, and it's still very close to a lot of us. But as he said many times, you know, don't worry about the mule, just load the wagon. And we got up the next day and kept trying to pull the wagon just like he would have us do. And it's easy to do, Paul, when somebody like him, he grabs your heart. You know, he grabbed it when I was 12 years old, but when he came back to me when I was a professional and trying to learn a vocation, and he wanted my opinion and viewed you know, things that we could do for him legally, that was ultimately the greatest reward ever, was that he had respect for a path that he had set in motion for me personally, and that we could have a relationship at that level was just amazing. And my story is very much like anybody's who knew him or met him. It didn't matter if you were from Auburn or Auburn fan or played at Alabama or Tennessee. He loved people, and he grabbed your heart, and he had you once he spent any time with you.
Rick Davidson with us, and I thought of this a week ago today, Rick, when we learned that Bill Lumpkin had passed away, and I'll never forget my first days covering Auburn, going down there alone or going down there with Bill, and getting to know your dad. And I didn't know him very well because I was a rebel rousing young reporter with a beard and John Lennon glasses, and I was about as diametrically on the other side politically at the time as your dad. But I want to talk about your dad for a second, because your dad is truly one of the legendary figures in Auburn history. I remember seeing something not too long ago, a couple of years ago, that he had gone to something like, I'll let you help me, with 600 or 700 straight Auburn games. Can you tell the audience about Buddy Davidson?
I'd be pleased to, and I hold those two men in the highest regard, so I'm honored to be able to even speak of them, and it's quite humbling, Paul. Thank you for asking. My father came to Auburn in 1957 from Robert E. Lee High School with $100 and a note from his high school coach to Coach Jordan. And he said, if you'll hire Buddy and put him to work, he's been a great asset to me. You won't be disappointed. And Coach Jordan let him work as a football manager that first year. And that season, Auburn went undefeated. And back then, freshman managers didn't get to travel with the team, but for whatever reason, Dad had earned it, and they let him start traveling. I think the Tennessee game began a streak of 700 consecutive games where Dad, for the majority of that, was at work and working as a sports information director and in various capacities within the athletic department. But then after his retirement, he continued to go to games and actually had a stroke, which made it a little more challenging in the last two or three years. But he made it to 700 games, and the Ole Miss game here in Auburn several years ago was the last one. And he just decided at that point that he'd seen all he wanted to see. And the next week when the team went to Baton Rouge, we stayed at home. And I went that Friday evening, and I said, Dad, we can still get there. And he said, you know, Rick, I've worked all my life, and I've worked hard at it, and I've enjoyed it, but I'm ready to stay home. And it was a sweet time.
No, and again, Rick, I can't tell you how many days I would carry my people would not believe what we used to write newspaper articles on. They're not these sleek little computers and sit in his office and Housel's office. Yep. and watch him operate. And I say this, I mean, I was always on the periphery because we were, but I was always just intrigued by his dedication and love. And I think when people who don't know Auburn very well are curious and try to ask people to define what it means to be an Auburn man or part of the Auburn family, I think of your dad and so many people from that generation, because I think they helped to personify it.
Well, absolutely. And the thing that you know about Dad, and I call him Uncle David, but David Housel and Coach Dye, it wasn't a job for them. It wasn't work for them. That's what they were called to do. And it didn't matter if it was 7 in the morning to, you know, 10 at night. Back then, there was one sports information director in a number of sports, and you didn't have ESPN to publicize it and put it out there and show it. So when Harvey Glantz set a new record at a track meet, at the same time Buddy Gardner was setting a record at a golf tournament, there was only one person in the staff that they had assembled to get that information out and promote our players, you know. And when Coach Sullivan, who was a dear part of the family too, you know, won the Heisman in 1971, he played on TV one time, and it was up to Dad and the staff at that point to make sure that everybody that voted knew who he was and how good of a season he was having and why he should win the Heisman. And so I can remember as a kid, like you're describing, carrying typewriters to the old press box and helping. And then when the games were over, we'd go back to the Coliseum and they'd run the mimeographs and they would telecopier. And we would literally, I'd sit back there and watch four telephones hooked into these devices. And when it went off and it stopped spinning, I had to go get Dad and say, all right, who's the next one, you know? And so, that's just how we communicated back then. But they, like a lot of Auburn men and women, you do the best you can with the information you've got, with the technology you've got, and you do it with your heart, and good things happen.
Yeah, and Rick, I know it sounds old school, and I mean, it's weird that now I'm waxing poetic. I mean, I may be part of the problem, part of the reason why the sports information directors and the media quit getting along, but they were like family though, and
absolutely,
you saw it firsthand.
I did. I mean, one of the things that we loved was my mother, after every home game, would host Bill Lumpkin and Mr. Bisher from Atlanta. And you never knew who all was coming that day, but there was always going to be a gathering. And they were all friends, and they were very collegial. And they were invested in the program and in the people, and they wanted the best for everybody. And those relationships, you know, are just still treasured. And, Paul, I do remember an incident. I think it was in 1981. When you described yourself, and I told you 12, and I believe it was the Mississippi State game when we should have won the game and didn't at the end. And
right.
We were all still getting to know Coach Dye, and we weren't sure what was going on. I'd watched him fire our equipment manager the very first game about three times during the game, and everybody's walking around wide-eyed. And of course, he's just passionate and fiery, and we started settling in. But after that game, I was barely in the locker room, and I think you had just set foot in it, and I don't think he wanted you or me in there anymore, and he made that very clear in some terms that got my attention. So we both eased out, kind kind of in shock, and that was a learning day for me for sure.
I remember that game very well, Rick, and that may have been the turning point in Pat Dye's tenure at Auburn, because he was determined not to ever lose a game like that again.
Absolutely. I think it cost us a chance at a bowl game, and he was not going to let that happen again, as you said.
Well, I don't know if I have enough time. I'll tell you one more story. I know they're telling me we need to write, but your dad sent David Housel in 1980, my first year covering at the Birmingham paper. I'd written something about Doug Barfield, and I don't really remember exactly what it was, but I can tell you it was pretty inflammatory. I'd interviewed a player. I'd snuck in the dorm and talked to a disgruntled player. And Coach Barfield was about to get fired. I mean, it was inevitable. He was gone. But he basically said to your dad, I think, don't let that guy on campus tomorrow for the press conference. And I think he went as far as to say, I'll have him arrested. And all of a sudden, on Monday afternoon, I see David Housel walk into my editor's office, and they're meeting, and then then Lumpkin goes in there. And finally, he leaves. He doesn't even talk to me. He's gone. And Bill comes over and said, Paul, why don't you cover I don't know what he gave. He sent me to Jacksonville State the next day or something, but I didn't go to Auburn because David and Buddy Davidson, your dad, did not want a scene. Now, by the way, when I found out about that later, I was distraught. The idea of getting arrested for covering a college football press conference was like would have been nirvana to me. But your dad came up with that idea, and he was pretty smart to do so.
Well, he's a wise man, and I'm so blessed to call him my father, and I thank you for asking about him and for giving us a chance to talk about this auction that involves Coach Dye's memorabilia and Crooked Oaks and Crooked Oaks Legacy Foundation. It's a small way for us to try to keep him alive as much as we can, and as much as we miss him, we're going to keep doing that.
Rick, before you go, if people watching or listening would like to get involved with Crooked, how do they do it?
You can go to crookedoaks.com, and that will show you and give you the information and contacts to book hunts, to have weddings there, to use our facilities and lodges. If you are interested in the foundation itself and want to make a donation, you can do that through the same website, but also under the foundation tab. But most importantly, right now, through this Sunday night, you can go to the auction tab or to the Robert Edward Auction, National Auction House, and there are 12 items that are being auctioned. Coach Dye's 1973 National Championship ring, his 1960 watch from the Orange Bowl when he was a player at Georgia, the football helmet, which is, I think, the most popular items, had the most bidding. The last autograph that he had, the last helmet, is in the auction. And we obviously want everybody to take a look at those things and support us if they feel compelled.
Rick, thank you so much. All the best to you and your family, and what a pleasure it was to have you on the show.
Thank you, Paul. We really appreciate your help.
Thank you very much. Rick Davidson joining us, and
yes,
we are – thanks so much. We're heading to a break later than we needed to, but old stories tend to take precedent over following a clock. We will be right back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We welcome you back, and it's great to have all of you here on a Tuesday afternoon. We started with Eddie George, and we have a lot more to do, and Dave is up next in Kentucky. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I am well. Thanks a lot.
I'd like to tell you one of many, many stories you might like to know about regarding Mr. Dye.
Would love to hear it.
Who I met in 1962 when I was assigned to become the sports information publicist newspaper for Fort Benning, Georgia.
Oh, man. Tell me.
Pat was on the football team. We became fast friends because they won the world championship for the military 2 to 3 years that I was there. In fact, I wrote so many letters and correspondence to people in my position at other posts. He was named most valuable player in the services, and I have all the photographs to back this up. He won the opportunity to go to the Touchdown Club in Washington, D.C. to receive an award as the MVP for the services in 1964, I believe. At any rate, he met Paul Bear Bryant there, and that's how he kind of got started. So we go way back with millions of stories that go back from Blythe, Georgia to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I think some of the things that he told me, as an example, the day that Kennedy was killed, I was with Pat in a barracks waiting to go to the stadium to play Fort Campbell when Kennedy was pronounced dead at 1 o'clock, and that was kickoff time. And I was with Pat that day. So from 1962 through 1964, we became good friends. He corresponded with me. I have a photograph of he and I shaking hands when he won the MVP award at Fort Benning, Georgia, where they were undefeated for 2 years. And as I said, he wrote me a lot of nice letters. I got to know all the guys on the team. And there's just a million stories. I'm 81 years old, and I went to the University of Kentucky, became a sports writer and sports publicist. The Army sent me to New York for some training, and one day they popped in and said, you're going to Fort Benning, Georgia, and you're going to cover the football team, and you're going to announce the football games at the stadium as well. So to make a long story short, Paul, Pat and I became good friends in 1962. I didn't know you ever heard of that. I have a wonderful picture of he and I shaking hands on the 50-yard line, me in military uniform, he in his football jersey, and all the other guys on the team, of course, I got to know, but it goes back that far, and I'd like to think, and I'm not trying to brag, I wrote so many letters and so many pictures to so many people in my position at other military installations throughout the world that they opted to make him MVP for the services. And that's how he got to meet Bear Bryant at the Touchdown Club in Washington.
So Dave, I knew Coach Dye very well and have written extensively about him and never knew that story. I mean, I knew he was in the service in Georgia, but I didn't.
He was a lieutenant. He played guard, and on defense he played defensive line. There were a lot of boys on the team that played for Georgia Tech, and his favorite closest friend was a kid named Billy Williamson who played for Georgia Tech. It was a halfback.
Wow.
At any rate, we got on the plane to go to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and we were laying around the billets waiting for a 1 o'clock kickoff against Fort Campbell when we got word that Kennedy had been shot.
Mm.
So we went to the stadium. It's about 1 o'clock, and two commanding generals were trying to decide whether or not to play this football game because kickoff was 1 o'clock, and that was the time Kennedy was pronounced dead.
Right.
So they looked at one another and said, let's lower the flag to half-mast and kick off.
So I'm not laughing at the tragedy of it.
I had with Pat
that is,
through the years. But
yeah,
he wrote me a number of times from Auburn, invited me down to the farm. Never had the opportunity, but there's a million stories, and I'd love to be able to send you a couple pictures.
I would love that. Well, I mean, let me put you on hold, Dave, and we'll make sure somebody grabs you here. And we will continue this conversation. Thanks so much. Thank you very much. We'll take a break. That is really interesting. Interesting stuff there. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Seth Walder, who came up with this FPI ranking that has certainly gotten a lot of people yapping, ahead in about an hour and 15 minutes. We've also already talked to Eddie George, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have you here. And Vance is up next in Alabama. Hello, Vance. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Good afternoon, Vance.
Yeah. Hey. I want to tell you a quick story about Coach Bryant.
Sure.
I graduated in 1960 in a little small town in Frisco City. And this man in Monroeville, who was good friends with Coach Bryant, came to my dad's store and asked me would I like to get for him to help me get a job at the University of Alabama, which he did. And I went up there and I went to work as a bellhop at the Stafford Hotel.
Oh, sure.
In 1960. And this man's name was Bud Latham. He was a big Bama fan and a big good friend of Coach Bryant. So anyhow, that first football weekend, he called me down at the bell stand, and he said, "What you doing?" I said, "Nothing much, it's kind of slow." He said, "Well, come up to my room." So I went up to his room and went in and had about a 20-minute great visit with Coach Bryant, just Mr. Latham, Coach Bryant, and myself. And this man also helped recruit Leroy, who is a friend of mine and who is just across the creek from me over in Excel.
Right.
So anyhow, that was
now Vance, tell me something, because I've stayed at the Stafford for Coach Bryant's funeral. Do I remember this correctly, that Coach Bryant kept a room there whenever he was in town late? Do you remember that?
He had a room anytime he wanted. He would go up there sometimes on Thursday night with some of his coaches and some of his cronies in Tuscaloosa, and they would play poker.
Right.
And they would sit around in their shorts and drink their booze, and we always wanted to get the call to go up there and take them something, because when you went up there, somebody reached over in the pot and pulled out a $5. Now, a $5 tip was unheard of in 1960. That was a lot of money. So, anyhow,
that is really interesting how
Yeah.
I mean, I knew Coach Bryant did a lot of things. I didn't realize.
He didn't know me from anybody, but he wanted to meet me because he knew, and I think he had a hand in me getting that job. I don't know that for sure, but he wanted to meet me. So Mr. Latham called me up there, and he was so nice to me, and really interested in my well-being, and he wanted me to stay in school and graduate and all this, and which I did. And I coached for 20 years, and I was a principal for 21 years. So I had a nice run there with the school kids.
Well, that is quite a tale, and I would imagine you had some tales you could tell. But thank you so much for the call. Good to have you on. Let's check out Robert, who is up next. Hello, Robert. Hey, Robert. I don't know about hearing. If I don't think I hear Robert. How about Don? Hey, Don, what's up?
Doing well, Paul. Always enjoy hearing your show. I wanted to comment on something you mentioned yesterday, or one of your callers mentioned this, speculating if Alabama had ever had a goalpost torn down.
Right.
In modern history. Did you ever find anything else about that?
I have yet to come up with anybody who remembers when it happened.
Yeah, well, I do not recall it. I joined Tide Pride in 1988 and have been to the bulk of Alabama's home games since that time. And it's not happened. And my son was 3 years old that year, and he goes to them with me and went to a few real early ones. And he does not recall that happening in his lifetime. I do not remember it at all either. I do remember a case, and you were at the game. I think I saw either you on video at the game or saw you in person. 1990, ending a four-game Auburn winning streak.
Oh, yeah.
At Legion Field with Coach Stallings' first year. And people at the south end zone started jumping onto the field, and I felt kind of bad for them. They were celebrating, and they were getting arrested, getting little tie straps put around their wrists and being piled up near the goalpost at that end of the field. And that's the closest that I remember in my experience of Alabama fans that I can recall.
Yeah, I do remember that, Don, and that was a big celebration because the stranglehold that Auburn had really held over Alabama at that moment was pretty unbelievable. And
yeah, it was pretty wild. Let me mention this real quick too. I was coming through Mississippi yesterday. I have a friend that lives over on the river in Greenville, and if you recall, I know you live not far away from there in Memphis, about 150 miles. But if you recall, in the early time of women's basketball, since that season has just ended, you were mentioning about, you know, UT coming into their prime in basketball under the time when Coach Summit played with them.
Hey, I hate to do this, Don. We are literally running out of time here, and it's going to cut you off. We'll finish this conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.